Well, we'll call the meeting to order again. I have a statement here by Rosie Simon, and she didn't wish to come to the microphone, but she handed it in, and I'll read it. My name is Rosie Simon. I'm 26 years old, and I have two children. I'm an Alaskan native. One advantage is the native corporations, because before 1971, not very much native people were involved in money-making ventures, such as air services, hotels, stores, etc. We did not have the opportunity or the money or the know-how. Some did, but maybe only one-tenth of Alaskan natives, probably not even that much. This way, we are all involved instead, only a few of us, or else the white people. Also, the corporations provide jobs and job training or the opportunity to go to college. What about our children who will decide if the future plan will apply to one-quarter, one-half, three-quarters, or full native? Will they try to get shares only or try for land also? How about the ones who were under 18 years of age in 1971? Is it too late for us to get land? I'd like to see the time when we have land. One thing I thought wasn't very wise was when they decided we could sell our shares in 1991. Because we will be just like fish bait for the rich and power-hungry people from all over. Since we really just got started in the world of business, there are a lot of people who wouldn't mind getting our land and shares. Who does not have any sympathy for us? Who wouldn't even care if we go hungry? So that statement by Rosie Simon will become part of the record. I should tell you that after we leave, you want to submit a statement in writing to the Commission, you can send it in the mail to our office in Anchorage, and it will become part of the record of the Commission. And Claude Dementiev has our address, and he will duplicate it and send it out to be posted here in town and in Hooslea and Lakatet and the other one. Alatna. Yeah. Let me also on behalf of Jim Sykes and my wife, Beverly, thank you all for the potluck supper. It was really good, and we enjoyed it very much. And I didn't need any proof of what you were talking about, but if proof were needed that you get your living from the land around here, it was pretty good evidence. Well, okay, we can start then with some other people tonight. If you want to speak, just come up here
Right after our dinner, I spoke with one lady that brought to mind another issue that the corporation find itself trying to fight with all the time. And that is the subject of education and scholarships. The corporation at almost every board meeting is asked to finance the scholarship program. Now, this is something that the board would like to do, and is planning on doing that. However, that comes to a point where we have to maintain the profitability in order to afford scholarships. It's kind of a catch-22 situation once again, where if we use the corporate money to finance human resource development on a grand scale, there will be nothing for our shareholders to manage in the future after they're trained. At the same time, right now, even though we would like to finance scholarships, we are forced into a situation where we need the finances presently in order to make profits for the following, for the future, so that we can afford the more honorable things like scholarships, other type of human resource projects. The subsistence video project that we're assisting in financing right now is the closest we've gotten to any type of education by helping Wayne Atla, in terms of his salary, learn the trade of the video world. I do know that the corporation is fighting with the scholarship issue, wanting to do it now, not being able to afford it, planning for the future, and still trying to keep shareholders at bay for the moment. But I don't think it can stay that way much longer. Shareholders need some assistance. What type of assistance, whether financial or otherwise it may be, we don't know at this moment, but it's necessary for as a corporation to plan those and just hope that we have the finances in the future to be able to afford scholarships. I'd like to just add that to my testimony.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Wilson Sam. Since you was bringing up Wayne Atla there, we've been working with Wayne since last summer, and we're working on a film about subsistence lifestyle of different seasons. You know, we've been working on we start again this spring, so we got the spring season of lifestyle, hunting and camping and stuff, and then we're going to the summer season, getting ready for fishing, things like that. And then now we're going to go into the fall, early fall, and then we're going to go into a late fall of lifestyle. And then this film is going to be shown on TV. We're going to review it. I'm one of the committees on there, and whenever they're done shooting this film, then we're going to review it very carefully, and we'll see what they should take out and what they should leave in. You know, it's as a committee and as a group from the Kaikuk River. And we thought this film is going to be pretty good for our lifestyle, so that's why we're working at that. And then I'm glad that Wayne got the job to continue to stay on with Mark Badger and Dick. So I thought that was pretty good when Wayne gets to stay on. And there's other things that I found out. I was in that Yukon quest from Fairbanks to Whitehorse race last winter. And there's a difference I find in different areas. You know, from Circle City up to all the way up to Dawson. It's open for airplane hunters and guide service in that area. And when I hit the river in there, I bet you I saw only about two moose tracks between Circle City and Dawson.
So only two?
Just about only two moose tracks, you know. And that's why we're so much against airplane hunters and things like that here in the Kaikuk River. We try to watch that very close so that we don't get too many outside hunters into our area. And that's one way we're trying to manage our area, is to keep the airplane hunters out, because we have tough enough time on the ground hunting for ourselves as it is to manage our own areas. And one time I talked to Jimmy Huntington, and he said, you know, he said, you native peoples in the villages is really good of feeding peoples, he said. You know, he say, as having a, his white man was dad, I mean, his dad was a white man, you know. So he said, as coming from a white man, he say, I notice, I kind of know the value of dollar, he said. And he said, you know, he say, when you, if I come to your house in the village, he say, you give me a bowl of soup. And he said, you give it as a gift, as a spiritual health for my body, you know. But he said, a white man thinks different. Say, a white man would say, he'll give you a bowl of soup if you go to his city. But he said, in the back of his mind, he's going to find a way to get the dollar back for that bowl of soup that he gave you. Same time he's giving you that soup, he said, he's going to find a way to get that dollar back from that bowl of soup he gave you. But he said, in Indians, he said, they just give it. They never think twice about it. And that's what I got from Jimmy Huntington. One time we got to talking about that, you know. And I think the government is the same way. You know, when he gave us 20 years to think about this. He said, I give you 20 years. But at the same time, in the back of his mind, he's thinking about how he's going to take a bite off each year. If he gave me 160 acres, he's probably figuring out right now how he's going to shove me off of that 660 acres after 1991. He probably got that all figured out already. He probably shoved me off by really boosting up the tax or something like that, you know. So I was really thinking about that one. I thought about what Jimmy and I was talking about one time. So those are the things we got to put up our guard for. You know, we should be ready. If our children can go back to school and get the education, then we can make that government or whatever, the white guys could fight them with their own words, you know. I think that's an important part, is to get our kids really educated, and then we can get them to fight for our land. You know, I'm not saying that physically fight, but you know, with pencil and papers and words. You know, I think that's an important part right there. They can get educated. You know, so that's the important part. I think the kids should know to get education. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Burke Massan from Hoosier. What I'd like to talk about is I got 160 acres down there, and when my old man died, he turned another 160 acres to me, and then I got four brothers beside me, and then I split it up, you know, just played safe from the federal government, so that way we'll have more power, you know. Then the way it is now, anybody from outside, you know, around Fairbank can get permit and move right into that wildlife refuge. You can't stop them. Because I was talking to this guy down the ladder, that's why I'd like to stop, if we can make some kind of law against that, you know. So no outsiders could come in. But the way it is right now, they can get permit and shove anybody out. Even if their own fish come, if they got no native allotment in there. You don't have to have permit for your native allotment, they told me. but they should have permit for their fish camps. Another thing I'd like to talk about is how come those retired people don't get their, you know, share out of that die on, whatever you talk about it, you know, before they even, those, I know Dion is going broke, you know, they lost a lot of money and they should give some of it to their retired peoples. Maybe they might invest that money to someplace else instead of Dion. That's all I got to say.
Thank you. Thank you.
My name is Bessie Williams. I'm from Elkhackett. And I filled out an application for a native allotment, which my application got lost in the shuffle someplace. And I've never taken the time to try and understand the Alaska Native Land Claims issues. But since I came back 2 years ago, I'm trying to, you know, learn about it. And I'm a little nervous. I think we should do something about the children that are born after 1971, because I've got three boys and none of them are eligible for through the Native Land Claims. And we shouldn't leave them out. And we should try and preserve our way of life. We have no natural resources up in Elkhackett, too. And the only way of life up there is subsistence and some and seasonal jobs. And the other thing I'd like to know about is BLM left a fire up there. It was on Native allotment, and I thought that until 1991 that the government or the state should protect these lands. But do you know anything about that?
Well, are the lands Native corporate lands?
It's a Native allotment. Fire is on the Native allotment, and they left the fire because it was a Native allotment. I thought that they were supposed to protect the lands until 1991.
Yeah. Well, let me take that under consideration.
Okay. And the other thing I'd like to know is what's going to happen to the Alaska Native Health Service after 1991?
Well, the Alaska Native Health Service is one of the services provided by the federal government that I think you would ordinarily expect to be continued. There's nothing in ANCSA that says that the federal government can withdraw health services after 1991.
That's all I've got.
Let me repeat what I said earlier, that if you decide to send something in writing to the commission, there'll be our address in Anchorage will be posted in each of the four villages, so you can write to us if you decide you want to add something later on. And let me repeat what I said earlier, that my wife Beverly and Jim Sykes and I did very much enjoy the potluck supper, and we sure appreciated the food. It was very good.
I'm Lydia Burkham from Allicacket, and I was born in Houston in 1931. And I have 11 births, but I lost 3, so 8 of them are living, and none of them had their allotment. I think one got allotment, 7 got no allotment, so I wonder if they can do anything about it. And we live like in old days, like only on native food, and that's the way I raised up. So I wonder if they could get allotment, those youngsters, people. I know what to say. Thank you.
Well, I spoke about allotments earlier, and if they didn't get their application in on time, there's really no hope for getting an allotment now. But in my report, I'll try to make it clear about allotments, because people all over the state are confused.
My name is Angela Endorndorf Huslia. I was born in 1916 in Hughes. In those times, my mother lived 90 years with me. And she used to tell me a lot of things about the background, how she raised. But she was born in 1918, and still, it's really hard to understand, but then I remember some that she said it's really hard, really hard time, starvation time, a lot of things that she used to tell me about. And I don't really know, I don't understand this, what's this going on, this native allotment, but then I'm just going to tell this story about the background a little bit. And then even in my days, it was hard time. It was really hard time in my days. And I'm just thinking, when first we got the native allotment, what they call, we didn't even have experience, any longer experience about the native allotment we get. And just right at 7, they said you're going to get the allotment in that time when we get allotment. And then I didn't think, and I just got fish camp right across here, right above here, around the bend. And there was cat bank, and there was 80 in there, and I got that allotment. And now it's not even 80. It just cut out. Only fish camp was there. And now today I think about it. If I know any better, I would say I can take land allotment, old town, or where I used to raise, where I used to have a lot of fish. I raised with the fish and meat, but I didn't. But I think it's elders think it's too late. It's his only fish camp there. But my husband Richard got a good place down Richard Slough. And this is it about it. And then I have a lot of testimony about the background when my mother used to tell me about. But I couldn't think about it this time. Maybe later. If you want to hear it, maybe later. That's all I have to say now.
Thank you, ma'am.
My name is Christine Williams, and I'm from Elkhackett. And I want to know about the taxes, how much taxes we'll have to pay after 1991.
Well, nobody could tell you whether a tax is going to be imposed or how much it's likely to be. The point is that native allotments aren't subject to tax. Native corporate lands, the lands that native people received in 1971, the 44 million acres, are not subject to tax. They can't be taxed until 20 years after the land is received. So if the state of Alaska starts to run out of money in the 1990s, and they wanted to impose a tax on all privately held land in Alaska, well, the biggest private landowners are the native corporations. So they might say, all right, then we'll tax the native corporations' land. Now, they might do that, they might not. If they imposed a tax, nobody knows how much it would be likely to be. But the point is that 20 years after that land is received, as things now stand, it could be taxed.
Okay. Well, that's what I have to ask.
My name is Susie Van from Hoosley. I was wondering why it can't be changed, the settlement, I mean, appealed or something about these.
Excuse me just a second. Can you put this on the PA? It's a little hard to hear. It should be on the PA. Oh, I see. Okay, go ahead, ma'am. Go ahead.
No, I just want to know why the law can't be appealed. You know, for the younger people, the ones that are not getting a native allotments.
Oh, well, the Congress could reinstate a native allotments. They could start them up all over again, but I think they're unlikely to do that. Only about 10% or less of Native people in Alaska hold allotments. I think that I think Congress would be very reluctant to reinstate Native allotments. But if, as far as ANCSA is concerned, as far as the land claims is concerned, that is the 44 million acres that the corporations received, well, Congress has already changed that law two or three times, and I should think that Congress would be willing to change it again if you wanted it changed, if you could agree on the changes you wanted.
My name is Berkenstein. I'd like to ask a question. What happened after 1991, like big oil company come around and buy all our land. They got all the money, you know. Could make any kind of rules on that, so they can't buy no land.
Well, you see, the corporations, the native corporations, could sell the land today, but they haven't sold the land because they know that their shareholders, people like you, don't want them to sell it. But if the shares are sold after 1991 to non-natives or to other companies, then they would be in a position, if they had enough shares, to take over the corporations and take over the land. Now, you can ask Congress to impose restrictions on that, on the sale of your shares. You can ask Congress to pass a law that says Native people can't sell their shares after 1991. Some people here today have said, well, maybe the best answer is to separate the land from the stock, separate the land from the corporations. That's another idea. Then the land would not be lost. And those are some of the things that can be tried. If you people tell me that your concern is not the shares, but the land.
My name is First Hojie Skin. How you go about, you know, if a white man moves on Indian land, the guy that have inherited from his dad, like, I know there's a white man that's on my brother's land down Dalby. He was living down there for about 2 years now. And I think my brother told BLM, but BLM didn't do anything about it. And I don't know if he's still down there or not. So, I'd like to know how we can get him off that land, because he didn't ask us to move on the land, or he didn't ask anybody to move on land.
Well, I can't really advise you, but I suppose the only thing you can do is see a lawyer and ask him to go to court and have him removed from the land.
You're not a lawyer.
I'm not a lawyer in Alaska. I'm not an Alaskan lawyer, but that's really all I could advise you about that. I mean, you may think that's not much help, but that's the best I can do.
Thank you.
My name is Wayne Atla, and I'd like to ask a question relating to what Percy just said. Who would bear the cost of going to a lawyer and fighting for what he was just talking about?
Well, if you go to a lawyer and he takes the case, well, you've got to pay your lawyer, and if you lose the case, sometimes you have to pay the costs on the other side as well. If you win the case, you're better off. But look, let's not get into that. I mean, that's a whole new ball game, and you've got lots of lawyers in Alaska and lots of lawsuits, and good luck to you.
Another thing is, could you recommend in your report that the 44 million acres wasn't enough land?
Well, theoretically, I could. But land selections have proceeded by the state and by the federal government under ANILCA, You know, you really did this in three stages. You had the Statehood Act that said, okay, the state gets certain land, then, or so much land. Then you had ANCSA in 1971 that said the natives get so much land. And then you had ANILCA in 1980 that sorted it out, the question of federal lands. So I would think it unlikely that Congress would be willing to listen to representations for more land. That's just a feeling I have. And I think what you're up against is this. You got 44 million acres in 1971. I don't think you're likely to get any more. I think the trick is going to be to hang on to what you got. I mean, that's, it seems to me that's what you should be concentrating on.
Well, how could we hang on to our own land if a white man just moved right into our land without even asking a permission from us?
Well, look, if it's land that's held under a native allotment, then he's trespassing, and you can go to a lawyer and ask the lawyer to go to court and get a court order to kick him out. If he's on native corporate lands, the native corporation can ask a lawyer to go to court and get an order to kick him out. I mean, if he's a trespasser, he's a trespasser, and there are ways of getting trespassers off the land. You've told me about that particular case, and I don't think there's anything more I can say about it.
Maybe I'll go to my native council.
Well, I leave it entirely in your hands.
Did I really hear right earlier that you can't sell your allotment, or can we sell our allotment?
Well, you can if the Secretary of the Interior approves. It's land held in trust. It can't be taxed, but the trade-off is you can't sell it without the approval of the Secretary. But they can't... You won't lose it in 1991. That's the point about allotments.
Yeah, I mean, after 1991, are we allowed to sell it?
No, it's the allotments stay under the same rules that they are now and always have been. You've had native allotments in Alaska for 78 years now, and they've always been lands held in trust. Nobody can impose a tax on them, but the native person who has an allotment can't sell it unless the Secretary of the Interior approves. So, I mean, that's the way all native land is held in the lower 48. All the Indians in the lower 48, they don't have their land held by corporations. Their land is held by tribal governments in trust, just like native allotments. It can't be taxed, but they can't sell it either.
Yeah, the reason why I ask is I work with some boys, and they said, after 1991, I'll sell my allotment for $1 million, you know, and
well,
somebody, a millionaire can come along and buy that pretty easy.
Well, that's the second time you'll have become a millionaire, because everybody thinks you became a millionaire under ANCSA in 1971.
That's all the question I had.
Here's somebody over here.
Yeah, speaking about allotments, you know, my name is Carlson Quay Cook, and I'm from Hughes. And speaking about native allotment, you know, is eligible for land on. I mean, I filled out an application, before December 18th, 1971. And I guess they lost my application or something because I never received any land. And who do I see about that?
Well, I suppose you have to see BIA and BLM. If you've applied before the deadline, that's floating around there somewhere, but there's thousands of them that are still hung up, still pending.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
My name is Dorothy Atlin, and I'd like to answer his question about who to see if you have, if you didn't receive your native allotment. You could go to Alaska Legal Service. That's what some people here did this winter.
My name is Gladys Rindall. Is it possible to be able to change? I know you're not really into this allotment, but... like you said, the federal government changed land claims a couple times, you said. Is it possible? There seems to be so many problems about people losing their applications for allotments, not only from here, from all over, but is it possible for them to be able to change that law or pass?
Well, it's possible. I don't think they're likely to do it. As I was saying to one of the other speakers, if you're going to apply for an allotment, where are you going to apply for it? The land has now been divided up between the federal government, the state, and the native corporations. So what's left for new native allotments? That, it seems to me, is the problem you're up against. And as I said, surely the thing you have to do now is try to hold on to the land that you were to receive in 1971, the 44 million acres. Now, you know, people at every meeting bring up allotments, and I've certainly got it in mind. But if you go ahead and say, well, everybody in Alaska, every Alaska Native should get a Native allotment of 160 acres, the question is going to be asked, where's the land going to come from? And probably they'll say, well, it's got to come out of the land that the Native corporations hold. I doubt if they would say it's got to come out of state land. I doubt if the federal government would say, we'll give you our land for Native allotments. I just think that the allotment question is a really tough one, and that the land you should be concerned about is the land that you received in 1971. It's held by the corporations, and your main job is to make sure you don't lose that land before 1991, at 1991, or after 1991. I don't want to suggest you pursue remedies that just aren't going to be available.
Another thing is, I know for a fact that a lot of people here in this room, not only in this room, but all over, they don't really understand land claims. I took land claims myself, but I'm having a really hard time trying to understand it. And I went to this land conference in Nulato a couple of months ago, and it's for a sub-region, Tana Chief sub-region, that's, I guess everybody knows our sub-region, Alcac and all that. And Tana Chief's job is to try to, Tana Chief Conference, their TCC is the people, that's us, the staff is just working for us, and if we want to know anything, if there's a lot of people that don't know anything about land claims and they're learning and they want to learn, and they have a thing that Tenant Chief have a thing that if we, our village wants to know more about land claims as a group, have classes, all we have to do is call them up and tell them we want to have some training on land claims, because it's never too late. This is going to go on and on. And another thing about federal and state government is we're working with them, and we're all having all kinds of fights, but if we really want to express what we really feel about how our land is being used and what's happening, or just not only our land, could be anything, we have to sit down and write a letter. They really emphasize that in that meeting. We could just call them up and ask them, you know, to teach us how to teach us about these land claims.
Well, every village I go to, people say we don't know much about land claims. Yet at every village, we spend the whole day talking about it, and people discover that they really do know something about it. They know at least what's important to them and what they want to do with their land and about subsistence and whether or not they want to sell.